The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Presence of greatness here. George Hamilton and Colin Buick from Off the Ball are both in studio with me. We're going to.
George laughing at the notion of me being great as well, right across.
I'm
the
laughing
studio.
At the notion of me being great.
Now, I'm going to talk to you, Colin, first of all, to preview the weekend sport, but we'll hark back to last night. And George was actually commentating last night on the Porto match where United journeyed to the north of Portugal and came out with the draw.
Yeah, I mean, we're just destined for infinite purgatory when it comes to Manchester United and Erik ten Hag, because Pat, I was saying, as soon as Marcus Rashford scores, I was like, well, this is never going to end. You know, after the Spurs humiliation last weekend, I thought he was done for. Then United take a 2-goal lead and it's like, okay, we'll probably get a good result here. And then once again, like, I mean, it's foolish on me to think that they'll actually see that out as a win and then to go to 2-1 and then be 3-2 down. And then he makes a substitution, a double substitution of Harry Maguire and Johnny Evans on at the end of the game. And everyone's saying, well, this is classic Ten Hag. And then Maguire gets the equaliser. Yeah. So now we're left thinking, how do you analyse all of this?
And we'll get George's comments in a few moments' time. But, I mean, obviously Ten Hag still on the brink. And we come into the international break after the Villa match, which is going to be a challenge on Sunday for them.
Huge, yeah. I mean, Aston Villa famously beat Bayern Munich already now the other night, 1-0. And there's a far superior side on paper. But you just can't predict United. They've conceded two or more goals 24 times since the start of last season in all competitions, which is more than any other Premier League side. So Erik ten Hag can't get a shape on this team, no particular structure, and yet at the same time they have amazing individual talent. So we're left wondering, Pat, what's going to happen?
Okay, now we have a busy weekend in the Premier League. There are some interesting matches. We've got, let's see, who are Liverpool playing?
Liverpool this weekend.
Anyone know? Crystal Palace away, I'm told. Okay, and we also have Everton, Newcastle, and domestically we have Rovers and Shelburne. So there's lots to talk about this
weekend. Yeah, huge. And I mean, last night, if people weren't watching the Manchester United game, they were distracted by Shamrock Rovers. Really brilliant 1-1 draw with Apoel Nicosia, considering Neil Ferrugia sent off for a second yellow card 5 minutes into the second half for the home side. And then Dylan Watts, who's been Shamrock Rovers' best player this season, was very surprisingly left out of the starting lineup. And he gets the equaliser in the 92nd minute after Apoel had earlier taken the lead 8 minutes after the red card. An absolutely brilliant result for Stephen Bradley's side. And it's been a great week for the League of Ireland, Pat, because Damien Duff versus Stephen Kenny last Monday night.
Yeah.
Shells versus Pats was one of the best games you'll ever see on TV.
And now we've got Stephen Bradley and Damien Duff.
Exactly. Well, Stephen Bradley won't be on the touchline, of course. He's
got
game
the ban
with after the comments the referee. But it's still going to be his side versus Duff's side. And the league is just getting more and more intriguing.
Yeah, and Stephen Bradley wants there to be an association of managers who can have a go collectively at referees.
I suppose he wants to word it diplomatically and try and get away with it somehow.
All right, now URC continues and the province is in action. We've got Benetton v Leinster, so Leinster are away and Munster welcome Ospreys.
Yeah, I mean, Munster had a horrific result last week against Zebre.
Zebre deserved to win, no question.
Definitely. They were outstanding. I think Zebre won the second half 27-5. That's how dominant they were. And Zebre have won twice in three seasons in the URC. So there was about 54 points between these two sides last season, because Munster finished top of the URC regular season and Zebre are the basement boys. So it was a horrific result considering Munster were 5 points clear at half time and had already got a bonus point try. And the second half was nothing other than a capitulation. Mm.
Yeah, have they analysed, have they fessed up as to what went wrong?
Well, I think the jury's out in terms of their defensive capabilities. They conceded 75 points in the first two games. So the first one was a win against Connacht, 35-33. But there's huge holes in that defence. And Graham Rowntree didn't shy away from, the manager of Munster, head coach, didn't shy away from the fact that they're very porous at the moment.
Now, Connacht go to Scarlets and Ulster are welcomed by the Bulls.
Yeah, Ulster had a tough result last week against the Lions, Johannesburg. A difficult, like very hot conditions, 30-odd degrees, and they struggled a bit. Connacht themselves are a very interesting side. Bundiaki is back this weekend, playing in his usual inside centre role. And Cathal Ford, the Irishman, has been brilliant so far this season. He was actually on Off the Ball Breakfast with us last week, and we asked him, do you have any interest in playing 13 outside centre so you can play alongside your hero Bundiaki? And he said, well, of course I'd like to see that happen. And it is happening this weekend.
And it is happening, good. All right, well, there's other stuff going on. There's women's football. There's also the golf, the Dunhill Golf, and all of that. But perhaps we'll tease some of this out with George Hamilton, who is not a one-trick pony, not just soccer, but many, many sports, including probably synchronised swimming. I don't know.
Synchronised diving, it was. Synchronised diving.
about which you know as much as you know about synchronized swimming, I
exactly.
Okay. Colm, thank you very much. Well, now, before we talk to George, we want to mention your prize on the show this week, a chance to relax and indulge in a two-night stay in two of Limerick's top hotels, the stunning five-star Savoy Hotel and the fabulous four-star George Hotel. They're both located right in the heart of the city centre, perfect setting for a business get-together or a chic city break. Check all the details at savoycollection.com. Now, today's prize is a two-night stay at the five-star Savoy. Breakfast each morning, dinner on both evenings in the choice of their New York-style steakhouse, Hampton's Grill, or their French-inspired restaurant, La Terrasse. To be in with the chance of winning, answer this question. Who is this famous Limerick-born broadcaster speaking in 2015 about the then forthcoming election?
Basic point is this: that in the last election, people voted for radical change and they didn't get it. And in the next election, everybody will be thinking, OK, the absolute disillusionment with the traditional parties, Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and the Labour Party, vote for radical change and they won't get it again. It'll be the same again. Isn't that the way it's going to be?
The way it's going to be. If you know who that is, well, text the word Limerick with your answer and name to us now on 53106 at a cost of 30 cent. Well, I've already kind of introduced George Hamilton because he's been with us in studio for a few moments or two, but he's here to talk about a number of things, particularly his new book, The Hamilton Notes, which is not only about sport, but also about your musical career, which is 21 years.
21 years in November, Pat. 1st of November 2003. Aidan O'Doul, the head of Lyric, new head of Lyric at the time, had an idea that he could add something to the schedule if he put me in there, because he knew I had a love of classical music. He said, I'll give you a program. It's 90 minutes long, like a football match. You just talk about where you've been and play the music you like. And it grew out of that. It became a program that was 120 minutes long, like a game with extra time. And now it's 3 hours, two up weekends, 2 days on the weekend each week. Ten till one.
Where was that love of classical music born?
I think it was born at home, because my dad was an amateur singer and he performed on the boards and the operettas and the Grand Opera House in Belfast. My mum sang as well, sang around the house. And there was always music in the household. And then I was taught the piano when I was young, and that led to me playing the cello. I played the cello in the school orchestra for 7 years. And all of that, and an O-level in music, kind of embedded classical music in my head. And so when I put aside those childish things like rock and roll, I realised I loved this and I wanted to be more involved in it.
Okay, and that opportunity eventually came on Lyric.
That's right.
But in terms of your professional career as a commentator, I mean, how are commentators born or created? Because are there kids out there listening to us now say, I want to do that. I want to talk about the action on the pitch rather than perhaps be active on the pitch.
Yeah. Well, I was always fascinated by broadcasting because it was the radio was in the house. We didn't have a television when I was a child, and then we got the television. And I was absolutely fascinated by all of that, and particularly by Kenneth Wolstenholme on the BBC when he was the commentator who brought the football only once a week on what was match of the day. And then he uttered that immortal line about some people are on the pitch. They think it's all over. It is now in the World Cup final in 1966. And so it was aspirational on my part. But I think any commentator you find, they haven't kind of fallen into it. They've wanted to do it. And that's what's brought them to where they are. So if you want to be a commentator, chase your dream, because the people who are commentators have all wanted to do it and are all enthusiastic about it and never work a day in their lives.
And you've said that on a number of occasions. But growing up listening to the radio, you're trying to create pictures with words. Mm. With television, there are pictures.
Yes.
So they're two very different disciplines.
They are. And I often say the thing about the radio is knowing what to say. The thing about television is knowing when to say it. And you must never forget that the television is driven by the pictures and the pictures are key. And this was something I learned when I started in the BBC, when we had action replays, but no action replays when you were doing the commentary. So you had to kind of remember it. You had to kind of judge it so that these were for highlights programs, so that your words would match what the editor would put in afterwards. So the discipline was there from the very start. And also you're taught to match the picture, so when when a director's cut is coming, like in the famous penalty shootout, close-up of David O'Leary before he shoots, this kick can decide it all. And then the wide shot, when he's about to take it, the nation holds its breath. Yeah. That's how that happened.
There is a choreography of
exactly,
all of that.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, even on something like MasterChef, you know, it's a single of one, a single of the other, single of the third finalist, then a wide shot. Maybe in the final, they go back even again for a few more singles, then another wide shot.
To build the tension.
And build the tension, yeah. Yeah.
So you're, that's a great word, choreography, because the pictures are choreographed and you as a commentator have to match that choreography, because if you're talking about something that the viewer isn't seeing, well, then you're taking the viewer away from what's actually happening, and that is not what you should be doing.
So if you're looking down at the touchline and one manager is punching another manager but the telly's not showing it, you can kind of advert to it.
Yes, but not labour the point.
Yeah, because they can't see it.
Well, again, they don't cover pitch invasions now. Well, I say pitch invasions. If somebody runs onto the pitch...
A streaker,
for instance. There is an instruction for the television coverage not to include that.
Yeah, which is a pity, because sometimes it's the most interesting part of a match. I've been watching in recent times.
I can remember Erica Rowe at Twickenham all those years ago when everybody in the ground was looking at her and the television too. But that is the point, that if it's not on the screen, it's not there for the viewer. And it's not for you to add something extraneous, because the picture is driving the story.
Now, there was a commentator I used to listen to occasionally before we had the telly and coverage of Wimbledon and so on, a fellow called Morris Edelson, who did soccer as well.
Yes.
To me, he was the doyen of commentators, because you could actually see the tennis court and as the ball's going back and forward, and imagine commenting on each shot.
Another who did tennis in his day was the late John Motson. And it always fascinated me, because Motty, as he was known to his friends, was really a football man. But somehow he'd been given this tennis assignment. And he was able, the speed of his delivery was such that, like Morris Edelson, every shot was covered. The picture was painted on the radio. Yeah. It was just incredible.
Now, people associate you with mostly football, soccer, but you have done rugby, quite a lot of it, actually.
Yeah.
Which was your sport from childhood? Was it soccer?
No, sadly, it wasn't. My dad was a soccer player and he took me to soccer matches, and that's what I wanted to be, a soccer player. But the school I went to, like so many schools right across Ireland, they have their own game and it's not soccer. So my school, it was rugby. And I played rugby, not terribly well, but I did play rugby until I was 18. And when I kind of escaped the rugby and got to Queen's University in Belfast, I took up association football. Too late to become anything of a player, though there was a time when I was offered a gig at Portadown Football Club. I was going to Germany on my year out from Queen's, and when I came back, the manager who'd asked me to sign for him had been sacked. And that was the end of my career.
Glorious career. Now, the break into broadcasting, how did that happen? Did you have to keep on banging on the door? Because that is a fairly typical career move for most aspiring broadcasters.
That's absolutely true. I didn't have to bang too hard, because I was still a student at Queen's my final year, and I had an aunt in the BBC in Belfast who was quite senior. She, when her boss was away, signed the cheques. So she was well in the door. And there was a programme that lasted half an hour on a Saturday evening, in which people like solicitors and school teachers and other kinds of businessmen would do a match report for a fiver. And I fancied I could do that too. And it would be a nice little string to my bow when I went out into the world, got myself a proper job. I could do this on a Saturday, earn a fiver and enjoy the matches. So I approached my aunt and said, how do these guys get in there? And she said, there are periodic auditions. I'll get you a place in the next round of auditions, but that's all I can do for you. She was quite a stern lady, my Aunt Isabel. Anyway, in I went. I did the audition. I got the usual, don't ring us, we'll ring you. But surprisingly, they did within 10 days, and that was me started. On Rugby Reports, funny enough, because they had plenty of soccer reporters and didn't need rugby reporters, the late Joy Williams, who became the first female head of sport in the BBC, she assigned me to rugby. One thing led to another. I commentated on my first match 50 years ago, which was Ireland-Scotland at Lansdowne Road, and away it's gone from there.
Yeah. Now when you came to RTÉ as a soccer commentator, I think that was
That's correct,
the gig.
Yeah.
Jimmy McGee was probably the doyen.
He was, yeah.
at the time. Mm-hmm. And then obviously you graduated to become the main man in time, and then did other sports for RTÉ. I mean, it's a small enough sports department, I suppose. So
yes.
When the Olympics come round, all hands on deck.
All hands on deck. I was in some strange situations across the years. I remember in Athens in 2004, we mentioned the synchronised swimming. I was actually given the call to do synchronised diving. I was on my day off on the first week of the Olympics, because the athletics, which I was there to do, are on the second week. And I got this call, can you get yourself into the broadcast centre, please? We have a problem. It was John D. O'Brien, whom you remember as the producer and the team leader there. And he said, we can't cover the synchronised diving because Jim Sherwin, the late Jim Sherwin, the swimming commentator, he can't get from the swimming venue to the diving venue in time because of the crowds in the Olympic Park. And we're doing this special 30 minutes each night on a sport that doesn't get big coverage. We're doing synchronised diving tonight and we've no commentator. So In I went.
How much did you know about
Nothing
at all.
And I was presented with a file when I arrived, and it was kind of speed reading and then into the deep end, so to speak.
Happily, there are pictures.
Yes, indeed. Pictures tell the story, and the pictures actually told a great tale, because Greece were involved. China, the United States and Russia were supposed to be the favourites, and the Chinese were running away with it. The United States, towards the end, they were messing up a bit. The Russians fell away too. The Chinese had one dive to go. One of the divers went straight in, the other belly flopped. I had no idea how that would affect the scoring. I simply said, oh, that's bad. And then the score came up as a zero, and I said, that's how bad it was. Fact is, I found out only afterwards, if you don't enter the water properly, it is an automatic zero. But what that zero did was put Greece further up the leaderboard, and when they completed their sequence, they'd won gold.
A home win.
A home win, and their first gold of the Athens Olympics, which was terrific. Mm.
Now, is it your job to make a game or an event entertaining when in fact it's not? Like, we've all watched 90 minutes of really boring football.
I don't think that's your job at all. And it would be obvious if you're trying to hype something up. The pictures, as I keep saying, will tell the story, and we'll find that there's no point, because you'll be found out. It is not a good game, commentator. Leave it. So you just have to go with the flow. The script is never written.
Now, many people don't realise that you are, in fact, a freelancer and have been all your life.
Indeed.
So it wasn't that you reached a certain age and RT said, goodbye, George, you have to go.
Excuse me.
Didn't renew, or did you decide they weren't going to renew and jump ship?
Every 2 years or 3 years, depending on what it was. It used to be three, then it became two. Every 2 years, you would have to decide, am I going to renew here? Now, it wasn't automatic that they would come and say, come on, sign on the dotted line, here we go. There are two people involved in any negotiation, or two parties involved in a negotiation. And it was my view, having gone through several negotiations in recent years, that things were changing, that maybe it was better for me to explore other opportunities, because nothing stays the same. And I had been with RTE for 40 years. Premier Sport came along with a very good suggestion. And it seemed to me that for me, because you have to look after number one if you're a freelance, for me, this was where to go. And so I've left RTE Sport. Haven't left RTE, as you've been saying. I'm still very much on Lyric. But I am with Premier Sport for the sports end of my...
Now, you were there last night commentating on the Porto... hosting of Manchester United, an extraordinary game, but you kind of, there was an air of inevitability about it, wasn't there?
Yes, it's funny that, because Manchester United scored two goals. They found it very difficult to score goals. Their big score was against a League One team, Barnsley, in the League Cup, but all the other matches have been tough. Can't seem to find a goal scorer, and then all of a sudden they get two. The thing that was overlooked, though, about those two goals that they scored, they were two goalkeeping howlers that let them get those two goals. So they were 2-0 up almost in spite of themselves. So there was the feeling that maybe Porto could get back, and Porto stuck at it, and they have a player who would do very well for Manchester United. Excuse me, big Spanish centre-forward called Samu. He's only 20. He's big, he's strong, he knocks opponents out of the way, and he scored twice last night. And he had them 3-2 up until that remarkable end.
Harry Maguire entry into the fray very close to the end. Just some other news breaking today, and that's that the EU Court of Law has decided that the FIFA transfer rules are in breach of EU law. Now, you were telling me during the break that this was signalled already in the opinion.
There was a legal opinion some months ago that this was the case. But, of course, opinions count for nothing. It has to be a judgment. And the judgment has come out just this morning. And this is that Bosman 2, so to speak, which opened the floodgates. And it's going to throw the transfer arrangements into all sorts of turmoil, and no one really knows where that's going to lead.
Because in theory, if a player decides, I've had enough here, and he decides to jack it in and leave, currently he'd have to compensate, or his next club would have to compensate the holding club.
Yes.
That may go out the window.
Absolutely. This was to do with a French player who was playing in Russia, and he lost his form, he was dropped, and then they wanted to dock his wages, and then he said he wanted out, and they wanted compensation, and he had to pay them money. So that is exactly it, in a nutshell. And the player, it puts player power back at the front, ahead of club power.
Well, George, thank you very much for joining us this morning. Your new book is called The Hamilton Notes, a reference to your musical loves. It's written by George Hamilton, as I say. It's published by
Merriam Press,
and available everywhere.
All good bookshops, as they say. Yeah.
George Hamilton, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.